Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Swung on, lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 179. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll have some meatballs to discuss, some things that happened in baseball over the last week, talk about some sticky baseball fingers and what baseball is doing about it and how it's affecting Cleveland pitchers. Speaking of Cleveland pitchers, we got some news shortly before the podcast that Shane Bieber is on the IL, so that is a thin rotation has just been dealt another blow, and that is just devastating all around. So we'll talk about that and what it means for Cleveland going forward, and one particular pitcher who could fix something potentially and be a contributor in his absence. And we'll talk about Amed Rosario on a lighter note of how well he's been hitting, both just over the whole season. And since he's sitting on it at shortstop, we'll look at how good he's been for Cleveland and that whole trade with Francisco Lindor and all that. Joining me for all that more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm great, man. How you doing?
Not bad. I mean, allergies are still the worst. Well, it's like 3 weeks now, but
you just gotta not believe in them. That's all.
Gotta believe in them?
Just not believe in them. Just ignore it.
I'm just going to gaslight the allergies.
Yeah, dude. Mine never matter. Yeah. You can do it.
I was thinking about it. We should try that with Shane Bieber. You just tell his shoulder that he's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
His whatever that fancy word for a rotator cuff is they used. It's fine. It's not torn. It's not strained. He can pitch. He's good.
Oh, is that what all those fancy words meant? It was rotator cuff. Oh, all
basically,
right.
It's part of the rotator, because I guess I'm not a doctor, so take this with whatever. But I think it's like part of the rotator cuff. Like your rotator cuff is actually several things, and this is the underside of it.
Oh, good. That sounds normal and healthy.
Yeah, it's totally good. It's fine. I guess it comes with extension. So like it's the fact that when you throw your arm extends so far, that's what the this muscle helps.
Oh, well, that's fine then. I'm sure there isn't a statistic here on Baseball Savant that says literally extension. Oh, wait, there it is. Oh, no.
Oh, no, and it says a lot just in capital letters. I don't know why that
is happening. This is important and needed for pitching. Oh, well, I'm sure it'll be fine or something.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to meatballs in a minute. I think at this point, this is the more important thing is the fact
breaking news.
Shane Bieber is broken. I mean, do you think this has anything to do with, I mean, just the innings? Because he's pitched so many, he's thrown so many pitches every game. Whether they're ever going to admit it or not, he stayed in for so many games to get those 8 strikeouts and extend that completely pointless streak that he had going. Like, I don't know if this is a direct thing or just kind of a coincidence, but it sucks either way that Shane Bieber is apparently broke and now we're stuck with Aaron Civale and whatever behind him.
I was thinking about this today, actually, after I heard about this, and he's, what, 77 innings or something like that? 90 innings, actually, I'm sorry, on the year, which obviously is less than, you know, a full season. But it's, what, 15 or so more than he threw a year ago. And I got to thinking about, like, obviously, yes, I think they've been riding him very hard. He leads baseball in every single pitching counting stat, right? Batters faced, innings pitched, strikeouts, all of it. What he does not lead in is all the rate stats because he just hasn't been quite as effective this year, it seems like. And I'm wondering, my thought was, what if this is kind of a hangover from last year, like because he had a whole year of not pitching a full year last year, is this a result of that, right? Like he was pitching for a sprint all last year, and now he has to go more marathon. And in a grander sense, are we going to see more of that, especially from younger guys who were effective last year? Are we going to see younger guys or whatever, older guys too? It's fine. They can do it as well. Who are going to suffer similar injuries of strains and whatnot because they just had that whole year of weirdness. I mean, I know I'm sure he didn't change like his process in the offseason or how he worked out or anything like that. But I mean, it stands to reason that they definitely were pitching differently last year, right? Because they didn't have to wait or stretch themselves out for 200 innings. They could go for anywhere they're going to get, 75 or whatever it was out of max. So he could pitch a little bit differently. I'm wondering if that helped influence the all-time season we saw last year, but this year then of course we're seeing different things, and I'm wondering if it's because over the last 20 or 30 innings or whatever he's just been more worn out than expected, piling on top of that, as you mentioned, him going back in when he really shouldn't have. I mean, he's got a bunch of games already this year where he pitched like 115 pitches or something like that. Just too many, like too many pitches for April and May. And that's just, like, I'm not going to sit here and say it's, you know, malpractice by the pitching coach and whatnot. But, you know, I mean, also maybe you shouldn't be sending him out there to throw 121 pitches when, you know, facing the Cubs, or that 119 innings against the Yankees, or pitches rather against the Yankees. Like, they had that bullpen at the time, and they continue to have that good bullpen, like, use it. And I just, it seemed like they were not using it. And I know, like, obviously they were dealing with only having 2.5 starters last now, obviously. But what was the point here, right? I think the biggest, like, what the hell would happen here was that game, June 13th. Really? Just come to, you know, yeah, it was literally his last start. For some reason, he went 5.2 innings and threw 107 pitches. I don't know what the hell that choice was, but he got a whole bunch of games that were kind of like that. You're just like, why is he still out there? And like, is it just for that streak? Or that wasn't the streak thing. That was just him.
Yeah,
being
streak
out
was
there,
way over at that point. But
even like, he threw 103 pitches in 4.0, you know, in 4 2/3 innings, in Seattle, back in May. Like, I don't know what was going on there. You could kind of tell he didn't have it, but they're like, do it anyway. Like, does he have to throw 100? It's like what they were doing with Corey Kluber too, right? It just seemed like they were trying to use him up as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and I get to a point, like, they want to save their bullpen, especially now because Tristan McKenzie didn't make it out of the inning. But I would rather have Shane Bieber than a fully stocked bullpen. Like, you can just keep cycling these relievers in as much as you need to. If he clearly doesn't have it and he's straining through all these innings, especially yesterday, because I think they mentioned he before the game he got checked out because he thought he could pitch through whatever was hurting him, but clearly not. And if it costs you an extra bullpen arm, you got to send down and bring somebody else up. I'm fine with that. Like, you got Blake Parker who's up now and pitching. You can just bring up more guys in the bullpen. I'd rather have that than force Shane Bieber to go out there just to make up for all the other absences. And then this happens, which is he gets a soft tissue injury because, I mean, I would think whether it's because, like you said, they didn't pitch as much last year and he ramped up to pitching so much this year and it caused a strain. But either way, he's injured now. And it's not fun when you just have Aaron Civale behind him. And I guess JC Mejia is going tonight. And we'll know by the time this podcast comes out how he did. But he looked all right last game, I guess. He hasn't completely flared out immediately like Sam Hentges, and I know Eli Morgan pitched in a monsoon, but there's just some guys who've struggled, and at least Mejia looks like he could be a starter. Like, Logan Allen was terrible, and they just need more guys like Mejia to at least be okay. They don't need everybody to be Aaron Civale and come up and be immediately great, but and especially Bieber's injury, it makes Zach's whatever he did to his finger look so much worse. Like, I don't know if it really was he was just ripping off a shirt and was mad and tried to throw it and hit a chair or whatever, but or if he did just literally take it off and bend his finger. I don't know what it was, but if it was something that wasn't just a bad attitude or whatever, it looks even stupider now because they really need him and he's going to be out for, I would assume, several more weeks, probably until Bieber's back. So it's just a very thin rotation now. And you actually wrote about that Sam Hentges. There's some hope there, sort of, almost. I don't even know if your point was that he could be a great pitcher eventually, because I don't know that he can, but there's hope with Sam Hentges that we can have more than just those two pitches that he has, which is just, what is it now? A curveball and a fastball.
I mean, yeah.
And slider's weird.
We've seen guys like, I mean, obviously they're super great players, but, you know, like, Randy Johnson got by with two pitches for a long time.
And so, he was a big lefty who threw really
exactly.
fast.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was throwing 98 in a world where everyone threw 90, so that was a little bit different, obviously, but even so, I don't know. And I'm just thinking about it, like, are we missing something with the bullpen? Because, I think you and I, and never at the site, and people who watch the bullpen can recognize that there's 6 or 7 varyingly good arms in there. Guys, some of whom are known, guys like Brian Shaw, for being able to eat innings. And, like, obviously you have your top three with Clase and Karinchak and Shaw, and then you have other guys, too, who are also very good. Are we just missing something that they feel like they can't rely on, like that Bieber needs to protect them by going 7 every single inning, or every single start, rather? But I don't think so. He's been good, no, so it's just like, why not use the good pitchers? I know you're gonna have to use them soon anyway, but like, use them because they're here. Like, don't not use them because you're worried about what might be tomorrow. Like, I know a manager can't manage. You can't manage that way, right? You can't manage hoping. You know, you need to manage every game, thinking about tomorrow, and thinking about the next day, thinking about next week and next month. But at the same time, like, he's one of the 5 best pitchers in baseball. Like, do something about protecting him. Like you said, you'd rather have 1 Shane Bieber than 4 good bullpen arms at the same time. So,
Right, yeah. And like even Class A, he didn't pitch through for almost a week at this point because there haven't been a save situation. I guess he's the established closer, but I know he struggled a little bit, but he's still, I mean, he's an ERA around one. So he's at least decent enough to put him in there instead of making Shane Bieber stretch his
Yeah, surely head, but... use him. There was 100 miles an hour, for God's sake. Like, what are we doing here? Like, are we just like, giving him a break, or any of those guys, you know, like Nick Sandlin or Hunter Steffen or Trevor Steffen?
I don't know where I got Hunter Steffen from.
Hunter Steffen,
Hunter
is a
Wood.
Of mine.
You're kind of confusing our big sweaty boy.
That is an actual person I know. Sorry.
Yeah, Steffen. I mean, like he's pitched in a bunch of games, but he hasn't been good. He's just kind of like your average innings eater reliever. He could also be a starter at some point. He's thrown 24 already this game. He's thrown a bunch of pitches. He's been a starter in the past in the minors, but which is crazy. We're all the way down to Trevor Steffen. I mean, we have him. Cal Quantrill is going to start, and then Eli Morgan. They scratched him his last start. I'm assuming he's coming up. He'll either start or just they're kind of piggybacking him off like Quantrill if he struggles again. But yeah, I don't know.
Whitgren seems like he has the kind of stuff to eat two or three innings. I think he can make his way through a lineup once. So, you know, I don't know. There's ways to do this. It's just I don't think one of those ways is to destroy the one great pitcher you have. It just seems poorly thought out, I suppose. So I don't know if they do now, but, you know, I guess they just have to gut it out and – it just sucks. It seems like they were just kind of holding on by the goddamn skin of their teeth to, like, keeping up with the White Sox. You know, I mean, they're four games behind them in the loss column. It just seems like they, you know, I mean, the White Sox aren't, like, doing themselves a lot of favors. I know they're a very good team, but they, you know, now even more of them are hurt. And I'm sure some of that pitching is going to, or maybe it's good. I don't know. Maybe they are just great. Maybe Carlos Rodon has figured it all out, which is good for him. He was always a very talented guy. And Lance Lynn is just a big, beefy boy and all this kind of stuff. But it just seemed like they were just kind of doing an okay job of sticking around and looking like a team that could at least be interesting the rest of the year. And this is a big blow because, if nothing else, having a guy like Shane Bieber is nice because, like, you don't have losing streaks, really. You're able to at least roll him out there every fifth day and, like –
yeah, and that's what they were doing too, sticking in between just whatever miscellaneous
seventh
or eighth pitcher they had out there. So that's a big gap they're missing. And now it's just Aaron Civale, and then you have these other four guys who are just up in there doing whatever. But
Aaron Civale has got to do a lot of. I mean, he's having a great year. I don't think we can say anything beyond that. He's having an excellent year, I think. I mean, you look at his extrapolated stats, like fielding independent pitching, not superb, but he's not walking people, and he's getting, you know, an okay strikeout rate, and he figures his way out through, you know, he pitches through stuff and, you know, he's like an ace on a bad team almost, you might say.
Oh, no, definitely. He's an ace now, yeah.
So yeah, exactly. Saying, yeah.
He is now the ace, and maybe he wouldn't be if Shane Bieber and Zach Plesac are here, but he sort of is now.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I mean, he's forced it, and this is just what, you know, hey, you know, we're all having flashbacks here, the times of when it was Justin Masterson and not much else.
Oh, God.
I know, right? But this is, I mean, hey, this is what it is. And so one would hope that they can, that the Cleveland pitching machine can continue to churn something out, help figure, you mentioned obviously Henches or any of these guys can help them figure something out to be effective and understand that they are talented and they belong there and, you know, all that sort of a stuff. But will they? I don't know. I mean, I know you mentioned JC Mejia looking okay, but he also seemed to not be able to get out of an inning. So I don't know. He just seems to not have that pitch that can help him be more deceptive, I suppose. I don't want to get too deep into scouting report a single guy, but yeah, I don't know. They need to figure something out. I mean, of course they do, but they're probably kind of screwed, and we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Now, before even this news came about, we were planning on talking about, Bieber and every other pitcher, because MLB is finally cracking down on sticky stuff on fingers. It got to the point where it's clearly a massive advantage for pitchers. Apparently the final document on how they're going to be enforcing the rules is coming the next few days. It's expected, among other things, to include random frequent checks of baseball, watching the spin rates. I read on ESPN, they said 8 to 10 times per game randomly. Pitchers will be checked, most likely. It'll be like while they're coming on and off the mound. So basically during commercial breaks, they'll be checking the balls to make sure they're not sticky. Position players also will be watched just to make sure they're not hiding stuff.
Damn.
They do not want this shit getting on baseballs. My general feeling on the whole thing, I know it's been happening forever, and there's a baseball definitely should have cracked down on it before, but I legitimately don't think it was an issue until teams were basically, I mean, like in the past, they were chemists, quote unquote, mixing stuff in Coke cans to make sticky stuff, but now they are literally, I mean, getting down to the chemical compounds, and they can measure it every single time they throw to get the absolute best stickiness based on the high-speed camera. I think just the high-speed cameras in general have just absolutely broken the sport. I think we can come out of it as a better sport in general, but just what it's done, because how they can measure everything. I don't think it was a problem to the degree it is now, like 10, even 5 years ago. But the fact that everybody can measure everything so precisely now and everybody's so scientific about everything, like they had to do it now. They should have done it before, but they have to do it now. I think it's basically the way it is. I don't like if they're going to be throwing players under the bus and making them look like the bad guys. They were just doing it because everybody was and everybody got away with it. And then I don't want this to be another steroid thing. But at the same time, they had to do it eventually. And I think it's good also they're giving this big window. Like they could clearly just say it's already a rule. They could just start enforcing it and start suspending guys. But they don't want to suspend anybody. They want pitchers to adjust themselves before they make the change. And I think clearly they have. We've seen in the last week offenses up a pretty ridiculous amount, which could be just a small sample thing, but spin rates are way down. Like the knuckle curve for Shane Bieber was down 263 RPMs in his last outing, which that could be now we know his arm could
also
be. Yeah. Like all of Nick Sandlin's stuff was way down. James Karinchak is way down. Like he was nobody else is clearly using spider tack as much as James Karinchak. So, I mean, there's a clearly affecting Cleveland pitchers. It's not a shame thing. I mean, everybody's doing it. Like, Garrett Cole had a question, was asked about it, and he froze up.
The greatest answer ever? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Where he was just staring. It reminded me of that scene in Inglourious Basterds at the beginning when Hans is interrogating the farmer, and the farmer's just sitting staring, like trying to think of what to say. Like before Garrett Cole started talking, that's what he looked like. I guess what are your general thoughts on the whole, how they're doing it and how it'll affect Cleveland going forward?
I mean, I always liked the idea of a spitball back in the old days. I thought that was kind of funny.
But yeah, see, that's the thing. It was fun when it wasn't like scientific down to the science.
Because like I wasn't thinking back, I think 2011 or something like that. I was when I kind of learned about the whole blending of rosin and that spray on sunscreen. I remember I think it was Clay Buchholz who got in trouble for that for being very obvious about it. But like you said, though, it's. I still have no problem with it. I mean, the reason they put dirt on the ball in the first place is for better grip, and that's why they have the rosin bag out there is to have better. They don't want the smooth baseball because you know it's dangerous. Obviously, you need to know where the ball is going to go sometimes. But like you said, it seems like it's just been pushed too far, and it's gotten a little bit silly. I was trying to figure out how this like benefits a team like Cleveland. Right, who is known for developing good pitching historically, but not good hitters. So when offense is down, generally they're going to suffer even more. But the question being, if they've been developing good pitching, how have they been doing that? And have they been doing it by having good chemists, right? Like actually being good at that sort of a thing. So,
and I think we've seen that Bieber can pitch too without – like against the Mariners, again, we don't know if it was his shoulder, but it looked a lot like he was just throwing his curveball, expecting it to break and be deceptive as it always was, but it wasn't, which could partially be because it wasn't so sticky and he was not, it just wasn't as deadly as always was. But also I'm fine with that. Like I get that it hurts Shane Bieber and that sucks for me as an Indians fan, but also like, I like the idea that not every pitcher can succeed in the exact same way. Just throw 96 and have a big breaking curveball. Like I feel like that it might bring back some guys who just rely on control and can get ahead of hitters and work that way instead of just having their hands be dipped in glue and slinging balls everywhere.
I think the hitters are too good now. To be honest, I think guys who just rely on control and can only throw like 92 are still going to get screwed.
Yeah,
and so those guys are probably going to fall by the wayside. I will say that it sucks. Not sucks. It's fun to think that the hero in this is honestly Trevor Bauer. I mean, I'm very proud of him. he played the. He's like, they're doing this. We don't care. I'm doing it now. I'm going to Cy Young and get paid 80 whatever hundreds of millions of dollars. Just, I don't know. Proud of him. Proud of him on the bilking. Honestly, how can you be mad? If you can't beat him, join him. And so he did. Yeah.
I don't know if proud's the word I am of him, but I like with anything Trevor Bauer does, I don't think he was out of sincerity or trying to right the wrongs of baseball. He was just annoyed that other people were doing a thing he wasn't doing. And then he wanted them to stop.
Would this be like chaotic good? I can't
oh, yeah.
Tell.
I would say chaotic neutral,
or,
maybe.
Or lawful evil. I can't tell which one.
Chaotic neutral, maybe, because he's not doing anything. I guess it's good, sort of.
I get. Yeah, I mean, he's because neutral. You want to do things by the rules. Maybe chaotic neutral. I guess because he's just pointing it out and pointing out, saying, "Fine, I guess we're doing it. We're just doing it this way." And so,
yeah, I think he would want to be seen as chaotic good, but he's more chaotic neutral. Like he's not doing it because he's. I'm just waiting for the vlog in like a month, like the 10-minute video of how much of a hero he is for defeating the stickiness in baseball. Meanwhile, he made several hundred million dollars and now is like a four ERA pitcher again. So,
like, but, I mean, you know, screw you, Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, they had the money, they paid him. So, yeah, good for him in that but, sense.
But. And the thing is, everyone knew anyway. Everyone knew this was happening. And so, like, to say that Andrew Friedman did not have an idea that this was a thing, like, of all the teams to probably to have bought in on a deal like this, it's definitely the Rays, like, if not institutionally, at least somewhere like within the clubhouse and stuff. I'm sure it's all over there too, but it will be interesting in general to see the impact in general, but how this will separate players. Like, if there are just guys who do have big hands and they can get six spin and other guys who just can't, right? Like, if we see Jacob DeGrom continue to post a 0.6 ERA and you're like, oh, this guy's just a freaking nature. Jesus Christ. That's fun. Honestly, to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff like that, I'm very excited to be able to see that happen. Benefits Cleveland, that'd be great. Like, if they actually have figured something out and they were just benefiting even more from this, so be it. If not, then, well, we're going to have a stinky team with no offense and no pitching. So, I don't know. Welcome back to 1974, whatever year it was.
And yeah, that's the whole, like, it separates people is what was fun about steroids. It was like a couple guys who overused it and were gigantic and hitting 70 home runs. It wasn't like Michael Pineda can suddenly throw a really good curveball. Like, that doesn't help the game. I don't think. Like, everybody can do it. Like,
we're all Barry Bonds, and Barry Bonds is steroids. Like, oh shit. That's not fun anymore.
But you have Barry Bonds, McGuire, and Sosa just out there, gigantic forearms. And it's fun because you got these guys who are really good. Like, everybody wants a home run chase. Nobody wants everybody to hit 30 home runs. It's not as fun. And, like, nobody wants everybody to strike out 200 batters.
Yeah, like, I want it to be exciting that I'm going to see Max Scherzer face Jacob DeGrom. I don't want to see, like, I'm not getting jazzed over Joe Ross versus
Steven Matz is out
Steven
here.
Steven Matz. With a 2 ERA. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm like, this is, why am I, like, this just stinks. Like, I want it. I came to this game to see Juan Soto hit 3 home runs. Like, this is why I'm here at this game specifically. Not to see whatever, yeah, Mats or someone throw a shutout. Like, this stinks.
And it does definitely, like, this is a very tiny change in the grand scheme of things, but also to your point of that hitters are so good. Like, this one little tiny thing, a drop in RPM, and look what the offense has done.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
It's, and again, crazy, like, how close these two sides are.
It may be a small sample size. I don't know. But what to the other side of my earlier point, too, about what this will actually tell us about what Cleveland was actually doing when it came to pitching. You know, there was an article in The Athletic a while back where they're really trying to crack hitting. And, like, it's impossible to do that if the other side of the ball is being completely dishonest. Like, if it's just turning everyone into just a Cy Young caliber pitcher. So maybe they actually have found good hitters, right? Like, I know we're all big idiots and we all love guys like Harold Ramirez, but what if he's good? What if Josh Naylor goes on a tear for the next month and a half and ends up with 35 home runs because he's actually good. The spin, he's young and the spin has been just crazy. So he's just, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think their whole thing about finding middle infielders, like, I guess Owen Miller is not a great example so far, but
maybe he,
like,
is,
finding
though.
These guys,
maybe,
exactly. See, yeah, like, all these guys, like Owen Miller, Tyler Freeman, these high contact guys who for the longest time were nothing. Like, if the balls are back to being normal, then maybe these are the ones that can succeed, and they've already, like, they might be ahead of the curve on that. That's exciting, at least as from a Cleveland fan, is they might be already ahead of what the next offensive thing is.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be, like you said, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. There's definitely, you mentioned already guys like Sandlin and Karinchak, obviously, but Bauer over on, or other guys, Cole, obviously.
Yeah, Cole's just way down.
He was clearly.
I mean, there was that thing today about texting the old Angels guy who was dishing it out, and, like, Cole was one of the ones who was right there trying to get it, and Max Scherzer, so they were clearly.
Again, I'm okay with some stuff. Like, I remember they posted a thing that's showing, like, but this, like, the spider tack stuff, the stuff that's literally glue, or, like, the Coca-Cola blended with rosin, blended with, I don't know, bold lard or something like that.
Well, see, I don't mind those ones when they're just, like, doing it with, and not in a lab, but this guy was, like, basically making it his own.
Yeah, that I'm not cool, but like in being crafty and using sunscreen, right, and rosin and going like hey, just wiping, or like the dude from Rookie of the Year who had a little bit of Vaseline up here, and, you know, no, or what's that? Damn,
that was Major League.
That was Major. I always confuse the two movies. I don't know why.
It's basically
I do
the same character.
Yeah, but you know, he's just getting a little loogie, or just rubs a jalapeno underneath his nose or whatever. Just gross it up a little bit, you know.
Yeah, that's the difference between stealing signs at second and having a guy with a camera, and then you're banging on a trash can.
Like, right, this is, exactly.
Going, stealing signs at second is fun and it happens naturally.
Yeah, like, it takes craft and guile. Being, you know, I mean, what's his name? The guy who had the little emery board like hidden in his glove, and he was like scuffing it, and then he's just like, I don't have it, he just threw it, and the umpire just picked up and goes, it's right here, you idiot.
I never saw that. What are you talking about? That was there. That grew out of the ground.
Could have been there. Yeah. Not me. And
somebody, some pitcher brought up the idea that baseball knows, like, they can measure this. They could get a sticky substance that's just sticky enough to help control, but also not make it ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a good idea to me. It's just like doing a better version of the rosin bag. Apparently, that's not nearly good enough, I would assume, because it's not sticky. It's just not as slippery. But, like, give them something actually sticky. Like, if you could make something that maybe bumps their RPMs just a couple ticks, but it also helps them grip it so they're not hitting people in the head, then everybody wins. Let them just have something on their belt, but you can also know that this is what's in the tolerable range, that they're not sticking to the ball when they try
I guess my thing is I just like cool fun crime, you know, like bank robbers and stuff. I don't like
write that down for the title.
I don't like bad sinister crime, like, you know, corporations and mafia stuff like that doing crime stuff, or in this case the spider tech, and you know, or even to the point where like they're institutionalizing the sticky stuff. Like I like when Clay Buchholz was just like making a little bit of gross shit on his arm. Like, that's fun. Yeah. I don't know.
Some guy in the dugout burning a Coke can with a melt lighter, and nobody knows
what
why.
What are you doing? Crack cocaine?
Just doing some crack. It's fine. Don't pay attention to me. Better not be something sticky.
No, sir.
Now, on somebody will benefit from all this, presumably, and I guess he has, maybe recently, is Ahmed Rosario.
Damn, what a transition.
I know, right? Look at me go. It's like we're not talking about any other offensive players besides potentially Meatball, so I got to find a place to jump off here. Because Ahmed Rosario deserves to be talked about, because what the hell happened there? I mean, he was terrible to start. He was, if you remember when he was in center field in spring training and the first time in the major leagues, he was awful out there. He was not hitting the ball well. He just looked uncomfortable in general, I think, but now he's... I mean, even counting that in, like not doing a small sample size, the whole season he has 105 WRC plus, which is better than he's ever had. It's above average. I mean, like, is this just because he settled in?
Oh, that's
like, he's been way better since he's sat at shortstop, and then now he's.
I did want to say that's a 108 RBAT plus. Okay, but anyway, go on.
I was almost going to ask you, what is this RBAT? It's a big difference. Thank you. Now we know. We have the full picture of Ahmed Rosario.
It's about having multiple data inputs. So there you go.
But yeah, he's hitting with power. I mean, he's so fast. He's also not striking out as much, and he's walking more. So, like, his overall approach is better. Like, I don't know. What do you think this is? Is it just this is finally because he always was this hype guy? He was a top prospect, and now he came over. Is this a chain of scenery thing? Is this a comfortable shortstop thing?
Well, someone mentioned it on the Slack channel, but confidence has to be a thing, right? I mean, obviously, talent is important. He's incredibly talented. He was a top-form prospect. You mentioned, obviously, his incredible speed and athleticism, his great bat to ball skills. He can turn, you know, grounders into base hits better, which obviously leads to a higher BABIP and things like that. But luck obviously is playing a part of this. But at the same time, like, what are we going to last 28 days? He has a 929 OPS. Your last 2 weeks, it's 991. In the last week, it's 1,091. So is it a hot streak? Almost assuredly, right?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But like at the same time, maybe he's just comfy. Maybe he's just figuring it out. He's still, you know, he's not like old. He's 25. He was called up probably a little bit earlier than he should have been. He just was kind of thrown in the lineup in New York, and he got sent over to Cleveland and got, you know, sent wherever the hell in the, you know, like all over the diamond to play defense and just become a center fielder after never playing center field or outfield, I think, ever in his entire career, probably. Like, I would be surprised to know that he played more than 10 innings since he was a small child in the outfield. But I don't know. That's the thing. You look at so many of the rate stats and like the things that are like expected. He has a very high expected batting average. His expected on base percentage is very high. He's not striking out much. He's very fast. He's not, you know, he's not whiffing very much. He's in the 52nd percentile in hard hit rate. So not like great, but like middle of the road. And like at the end of the day, I don't need Ahmed Rosario to be hitting 35 home runs. If he's a 15 to 20 guy with a bunch of line drives, like, why can't that work? There was just an article on Baseball Savant /MLB.com last week about Yoan Moncada, who just hits the ball all over the place, strikes out more than Rosario does, but he has a line drive approach and he has consistently a high BABIP. Like, he has a 400 BABIP all the time. And is that sustainable? I don't know. Maybe not. But Rosario is that kind of guy that is not traditional anymore. But he's still making it work, and he can just turn hits in, or outs into hits because he's so fast. And I don't know, man, it's fun to watch. He'll probably calm down, but if he can, honestly, Matt, if he can be like an 800 OPS kind of guy, you know, just hit like what 270, 340 plus, I don't know, whatever, 350, 450, no, that's so far. Damn, you get the idea, math. Yeah, 450, I guess. Yes, that'd be a wonderful player to have, and I think that'd be stupendous. A great guy.
Played perfectly fine defense. Like, he's not been terrible by any means. Yeah. I mean, he's been fine at shortstop. But,
and again, comfort levels, being back where he wants to be, knowing he's kind of ensconced there at this point, knowing that the only guy challenging for the role really played himself out of the role. So, you know, ball profile wise, you look at on Baseball Savant too, you see a couple fun ones, specifically 2019 Tim Anderson. And 2019 Tim Anderson was really cool. Didn't he win a batting title? Like, that was a fun player to watch.
Yeah, he was
really good. Yeah, guys like that can still exist, because if you can't shift on him, then you can't do anything about it. And he's a switch hitter, so you can't really platoon him to death. And I don't know, he's making it work. He's kind of a guy who can turn himself into a good player. Maybe it just took a little while. Guys like Tim Anderson were the same way. They were very bad for a couple of years, but they just figured it out because they're incredibly athletic and smart, and they know what they're good at. So, yeah.
Yeah, which might be him. And that was Matt Schlichting mentioned in the Slack. That's probably a thing. But I think he's right. I think it's definitely probably a thing. No matter what, he's trending in the right way, which is what you want out of a 25-year-old post-type prospect. You want him going up, not crashing and being like Andrés Giménez, which obviously he was way younger and in his first full year. But like you said, he played out of the position. And as less Amed Rosario just tanks, I see no reason that Giménez is going to come back up anytime soon, really. Which I guess is fine. He's got plenty of options here. But wait and see what you have in Rosario. If he, maybe Giménez can play second next year, or maybe Rosario moves over to second if he's fine with that and not going to center field and to the infield and DH and all over the place. Maybe he just is fine being one of the cornerstone defensive places and he's still comfortable and hitting well. But I just really want to see if this is either just, like you said, a hot streak, or if he is comfortable and he can stick this out for longer than a month, because it's clearly a month this time. He's had, I think he's like 132, something like that, to be WRC plus. So, I mean, he's been a lot better hitter when he's been in second at shortstop, which I also wonder too, like, if this is a thing with Owen Miller. Maybe he's just, some players can just go all over the place and still be comfortable. Maybe a guy coming up in his first year, it's maybe not the best idea all the time to just kind of start him all over, start him at DH once in a while, make him sit and not, and just focus on all his mistakes at the plate as he's sitting when there's no defense. Just let him, I guess the problem now is there's no place to play Owen Miller. You're platooning him at first with Bobby Bradley. So maybe that helps. Gives him some stability, but I like the idea of the Cleveland batters getting some kind of just stability out of what they're doing on defense and just knowing what they're doing every day when they come to the park, and if that helps them hit a little better. And speaking of, I guess, that platoon, like, good God, Bobby Bradley is already crushing the ball. He's surpassed Jake Bowers in almost every measurable way so far, which is incredible. Like, he's hit the ball so hard. And
that's what kills me, too, is just there's so many young players still that we want to see get a decent shot of consistent play, right? And the only one we've seen that happen with, I think, in the last couple of years at this point is honestly Jake Bowers, which is so frustrating because he was just so bad. Like, looking back on it, honestly, he had his revenge tour over the weekend. Like, good for him. But, like, Yu Chang, I don't know. At this point, I've seen him play in person once and he hit a home run. So, I don't know what to tell you. But, again, maybe someone who – it seems like when he gets a couple of days going, he can hit. But then, like, same thing with Bobby Bradley. He has a couple of good days, and then they bench him. And it's just like, I understand wanting to get the other guys some at-bats, but especially now with Shane Bieber hurt, like, what is the plan here? Like, is it a rebuild? Because if that's the case, trade or DFA Eddie Rosario, right? And just start opening up slots in the lineup consistently every day for these players and see what you actually have. Give 50 games of uninterrupted play to Yu Chang. Give 50 games of
Yu Chang, but
why not? I'd love to see how many games in a row, what's the most he's played, right? Is it 10? Is it 15? Like, maybe he's good. Maybe it will take a month and a half to see if he's actually there. Or same thing with Bobby Bradley. Let him go through a swoon and then let him get out of it too, because otherwise we're just letting a guy have a hot streak, think he's feeling good about himself, and then
bench him,
and then he comes back, you know, 5 days later, a couple pitchers found a hole in his swing. He strikes out 7 times in a row. He falls into a slump, and he just bench him forever. Like, I'd be unsurprised if I saw that happen. And because they just don't have, any space for anyone. Like, even like, I don't know, like, I guess at the end of the day, like, it seems like now is a good time for, if I were the Cleveland Indians, to take stock of where we want to be, not now or next year, but in like 2 years, 3, 4, 5 years. And do they get rid of Rosario? Do they get rid of even Cesar Hernandez? Like, I think they could trade him at the deadline for something.
Don't say the other name, Aaron. Don't you dare.
Oh, no.
Don't
I'm
do
not.
It. Don't oh, do
of
it.
Of course not. Here's the thing. I still need to watch this goddamn team. and I need I, the two players,
somebody.
The two players I just mentioned are fine, and like a playoff team might like to pick them up as something.
Yeah, but like, I see no reason they should stick around at this point. Like, I'd like them both, but I mean, like, what are we doing here? Unless they go on a hot streak and like they have this big stretch of games before the All-Star game, like, unless they're a game behind or ahead of the White Sox, like, you're not going to catch them if you're starting to trail behind. Like, you might as well trade Rosario. He's gone no matter what. And I think Hernandez has an option for next year, or is this his option year? One of the two. So yeah, but especially Hernandez, because you have all these infielders. You have Owen Miller and Yu Chang. Even if you want to, sure, let him play at second base. Well, one of them stay there every day. I guess the only problem with outfield, unless you stick Nolan Jones out there, I don't know who you put there every day to get work. I guess
it doesn't matter. Johnson, put Yu Chang out there. Like, just give someone.
Just fucking get out
look,
there.
I'm just saying, get them in the lineup. And like that, the thing about Rosario too was, yes, you're putting him in center, but you're only putting him in center sometimes. And then you were moving him back to shortstop, and then you were using him as a guy off the bench, and there was no consistency to it. I'm sure Yu Chang would be an absolute butcher in left field, but it doesn't matter. They have one of those already. Like, who cares? So just, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, at this point, like, losing Shane Bieber is not a small thing. Like, this team was right on the razor's edge. And now with him being out for, he's on 10 to deal, I assume he'll be out for the rest of the month.
Yeah, because he's not even picking up the ball for 2 weeks, they said. So.
Right, exactly. So there we go. Yeah, he's probably going to be out until he's the All-Star break at that point then. I'm just saying, man. Like, that's
you're not
like,
wrong.
All-Star break as well. Yeah. Like, the 12th or something like that is the All-Star game. Like, that's, yeah, three weeks or so before he comes back. Plesak needs to come back and then pitch back into form. And, I mean, I like Zach Plesak. I think he's a good pitcher. He's not a great pitcher yet. Like, he's not like, thank God our ace is. It's not like when Jacob DeGrom came back to New York, you know. It's like, oh, cool. Here's a guy who can eat innings and give us a 3.40 ERA or something, which is nice. At this point, like, I hate to get all grand and, like, it's time to change everything and blow it up. But, like, maybe it is time to give some of the young guys some run. You mentioned Jones, obviously. But even give Miller, like, I don't know. Again, give him a run every single day. Let it all – figure out what you have. They want to do with what's his name? Bowers.
And yeah, well, they kind of had to with Bowers.
I know they had to, but at the same time.
I would rather do it now with Miller when you have the option of sending him down. If he does just continue this torrid streak, then you can send him down.
Like, if he's going to suck now, then he's going to suck now. And like, if you can give him 30 days to understand why he's bad, maybe he can go back down to the minors and figure out how he can be good again.
Yeah. I think I'm definitely at least at the point where I would rather them not trade like a Tyler Freeman or somebody to just have this temporary boost when Shane Bieber's out. Like, I don't think it matters. If we're doing one or the other, I think they're probably going to stay somewhere in the middle. But if they're going to either extreme, I'd rather just, like, I'm not saying the one name to trade, but like Hernandez and Rosario and trade those guys and just get it over with, because they're not, they don't have a place because the Indians aren't winning this year. And next year they're going to have more middle infielders than they know what to do with. So,
like, you can't just sit in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, you look at teams who actually succeed, one specifically that don't have money. They make bold moves, you know. Like, I mean, shoot, the Rays just traded what's his name, Evan Longoria, who was the Ray of all Rays, and they just, I mean, parts of that is a contract thing because they're cheap, but also it was time to figure something else out, and he hasn't been good for a long time. But like, you know, it sucks to think that these guys need to make business decisions, and I hate looking at it that way, especially because these guys are all just C-level Ivy League guys who I wouldn't trust with my mortgage, much less my baseball team. But
yeah, I would argue that, like, I think Clevinger was a bold trade. I think Lindor was the one who could just refuse to extend it. But like, the Clevinger trade was bold. Trevor Bauer was relatively bold, although you knew he wasn't coming back. But there's at least a couple in there where they were doing this kind of thing. That was kind of Razy in trades was doing that. I don't think, and I mean, those worked out pretty damn well. Like, not even considering the fact that Clevinger's injured, I think.
But like, those, I don't know, those all felt like rebuild trades too, and I guess they got guys back to fit in the lineup, but like, to what end, right? To the end of having a league average bat and a reliever who apparently isn't any good? Like, I don't know, like, I guess a guy like Cal Quantrill, what is his role? He's not to throw hard enough to be a lightning bolt reliever, but he doesn't have enough pitches to be a starter either. So it's like you just have another Dan Otero, basically.
It'd be good to have a couple of those Dan Oteros, not the last year Dan Otero, but a couple good Dan Oteros,
not the bad ones. But it's just, it's like they need to not sit in the middle, I guess, at this point. Like, I don't want them to. The thing is, they don't have anyone that I want them to trade to, like, make the team better next year. But they need to figure out what they have, because otherwise they need to reassess their very existence, I guess, right? They have all these middle infielders, and, like, either they're good or they're not. Like, they have a top 10 prospect list. Are those guys any good or not? Like, is Nolan Jones going to actually be a problem-solving, maybe?
Yeah, and, I mean, he's been hot lately. So, I mean, like, if they're – the problem now is just putting him somewhere. Unless you do the bad trade, the unspeakable trade, then he's got an obvious spot. But other than that, you put him in the outfield. Maybe he's your DH until Framil comes back, if he's out for longer. I don't know, but –
Oh, shit, I forgot about Framil. All right. Yeah. Never mind. I feel a lot better now. All right.
Yeah, he'll be back eventually. Right now, it's just miserable, whoever's the DH.
Yeah, this is okay. Ooh, man, I forgot about that one. Man, you know, I feel a little bit better right now, and I'm not feeling so bad. Still, you know, again, they got other guys who have ETAs. I think their top five prospects, all according to, are all ETA 2023 at the latest. And it's a third baseman, a shortstop, a catcher. The outfielder is the one who's furthest away. So, like, of all the things they need fixing, great.
But, right, yeah. You know. And, I mean, like, even Gabriel Arias, who I don't know if is in the top 10 of MLBs, but I know he's potentially this year or next year. So
yeah, he's one of the guys. Really, so it's Jones, Freeman, Naylor, Valera, and Arias, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, those are all guys who could be up. Like,
yeah, but, like,
they could be aggressive with them next year if they really wanted to, but I don't think they will.
But then, again, you have guys like, obviously, just to circling back to Rosario, too. Like, yes, they had to trade. They were kind of over a barrel with the Lindor trade, but they got the guys they wanted. One would assume, right? Like, I'm sure. Like, I don't know. I assume that they had more than one team bidding for Francisco Lindor than just the Mets, and they got the guys I assume they wanted. So they wanted them for some reason, whether it was a Band-Aid and a long term solution, going, you know, Rosario being a Band-Aid and Jimenez being the long term solution. I don't know, whatever, but, like, there's something that they want. So now, again, we just have more middle infielders in the way when they have more coming up. And, like, where is Freeman going to fit in? Where is Arias going to fit in? Because they play the same position and all this other stuff. Like, I don't know. Bo Naylor, they have so many catchers now. I don't know. I assume they're going to do something about Perez soon. I don't know. Like, this is all off-season conversation, but it's amazing how it can happen in a blink of an eye just because one guy gets hurt. And he admitted all about Rosario. Good. So there you go.
You know what? This feels weird doing it at the end, Merritt, but you know what? I can't even segue. I'm just going to press the button.
Meatball.
We're in the meatball zone, Merritt. It's the end of the show meatball zone. It's weird. This feels wrong, but
I was in the meatball zone right now. I had meatloaf for dinner, so that's like a big meatball. All right.
Of course, this is Meatballs, where we talk about interesting things over the last week of games. This is why it feels weird doing it last, because we already discussed a lot of things. But I tried to avoid talking about one specific thing for Bobby Bradley, because it is my meatball, and don't make me try to look up another one.
You slippery boy.
So we always talk about his hard hits. That's his big thing. Obviously, he crushes the ball. He's hit the ball really well. The big thing right now, like, we always know he's going to hit the ball hard. We know he's going to hit home runs. He's not striking out a ton. He has 10% strikeout rate over his first six games, which, I mean, for him, if he's at that, if he's that forever and he's hitting home runs as much as he does, he's like a Hall of Famer at that point.
He's a
god. I don't think he's forever.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, at some point he'll strike out more. But, like, if this has some kind of new approach, I don't know if there's something he worked on and he's better, or if he just faced bad pitching, because, I mean, he played the Mariners and, Cardinals, so.
Orioles, I think, right?
Yeah, it's not a great selection of teams. Do you know the last time Bobby Bradley had a 10% strikeout rate over a six-game span in the majors?
So, like, in the majors? Oh, okay, I don't know, Little League? no, I don't know. I have no, never?
Never, yeah, because he came up the first two games, he struck out 50% of the time, and then it never got better from there. So, like, it's a very small sample size of six games since he's been up this year, but he's been incredible, and I think the home runs are fun. Getting a lot of doubles is fun. All the hits are fun. But the thing I'm most interested to watch, see if he can keep doing, is strikeout rate. Keep it down. I don't know if it could be a platoon thing, maybe, because he's only facing righties. Maybe that's helping him out. But, I mean, if he does this forever and he hits home runs, they finally found a legit first baseman. It's too early to say that for sure, I think. But it's, again, like Ahmed Rosario, he's trending in the right direction, which is what you want, I think. Yeah, it's definitely what you want for Bobby Bradley.
The one thing I worry about with guys like him, and obviously, what's his name, Reyes and stuff like that. It seems like they have a whole lot of mistake hitters, if that makes sense, right? Guys who can absolutely just mash if you give them, once you face good pitching, it becomes a problem because they just swift. But, to our earlier point, where we can't use spider tack anymore and things of that nature, maybe that'll be a bonus to them, right? And then also, I just think there's certain guys, him, obviously, but like guys like John Carlos Stanton or like Aaron Judge or Joey Gallo, where they're just so strong, it almost seems like it doesn't make sense for them to swing as hard as they can every time. And like, they could just make contact and still, you know, rope a double or just hit a nice donker. But I don't know. I just wonder sometimes if that's a conversation they have. Like, I don't know. I remember reading something like that about Stanton, where like he kind of stopped swinging quite so much. Then looking at the strikeout rates, and they've always been, you know, 28, 27, 26, 29, 29, 23, 29, 33, 28, 29. So it never really, like, he was always way above average. You know, the average over his career has been 20.8, but he's at 28.1. But guys like Bradley, you know, again, very strong and just they get great just extension stuff on their swing that can hit the ball a quarter mile. It's great. Even he had that accidental little dribbler and then the opposite field. That was great too. That's good. Yeah, days ago. I liked it a lot.
What's your meatball this week, Merritt?
Well, welcome back to another edition of Merritt's Moldy Meatballs. Take advantage of this. Mudcat Grant died last week. And so I figured let's talk about him real quick. Because I was like, who the hell is Mudcat Grant? So I looked him up. I did a little bit of some brief research, and I'm assuming many of our listeners are also very unknowledgeable. Well, you know, don't know everything about Mudcat Grant, but we're going to be talking about him for a minute. Just a couple fun, quick factorinos about him. He did pitch for Cleveland for 7 years. I debuted with them 67-63 back when win-loss record made mattered at all. 1,214 innings over those 7 years. 92 ERA plus. So, you know, whatever, not great. But I read a couple funny things about him first. The reason his nickname, okay, so he's born in Lacoochee, Florida, right? And that's nearby where at the time Cleveland had their spring training. And so they brought him in for a tryout. And some guy there, another player there, just decided he was from Mississippi instead of Florida. And so gave him the nickname Mudcat. And that's how he got the nickname Mudcat, which I think is like, oh, you're from Mississippi. No, I am not. Oh, cool. So we'll call him Mudcat. He's from Mississippi. And he's just kind of stuck. His other nickname was Jim. So that's something. But anyway, I just wanted to look at one of his, I think, most amazing pitching performances from Cleveland in 1959 against the Yankees in late June. He threw a complete game. They won the game 5-4. Now, the interesting part being, Matthew, he pitched all 14 innings of the game and went 1-for-6 with an RBI. So very much a do-it-all kind of a guy that day especially. Had a very successful outing. What's funny is that is actually the fourth longest complete game ever by a Cleveland pitcher and the second longest since integration. Now, Matt, can you guess who has the longest? Wrong, it's Gaylord Perry. Tricked you.
I knew when you were leading into that you're going to ask me, and I was already ready to say Sam McDowell. It's always Sam McDowell.
Anyway, yeah, Mudcat Grant, I mean, again, I don't think he was a great pitcher, but he was more of a great ambassador of the game, you know, for black people playing baseball and that sort of a thing. I guess he was great friends with Buck O'Neill, who founded the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City. He had a big anyway.
Yeah, it seems like everybody who had things to say about him was all just great things, like how
he pitched. He's one of those guys who just pitched forever. He pitched 2,400 innings over, 14 years or something like that, 145 and 119 win-loss record, dead even 100 ERA plus over that stretch. Like, I don't know, just a solid guy who just gobbled innings, and when having a 4 ERA was fine because you pitched the entire game. You're just like, who cares? Like, they only give up 4 runs today, so, you know, good for me. You know, it's always sad when a legend of some kind dies, and it's always nice to talk about them. Especially the
he
fact
definitely
that
qualifies as a legend. All right, Merritt. That'll do it for us this week. Again, it feels so weird going from meatballs to the exit. This week.
We don't ask questions, so, you know.
Yeah. We do. Occasionally we have a poll. Sometimes we just kind of forget. But But yeah, if you find us on Twitter at Covering the Corner, at Cover the Corner on Twitter, Covering the Corner on Facebook, CoveringTheCorner.com. You can find me on Twitter at Matt RLY, Merritt at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. Talk to you next week, man.
I'll be there.